everyone, and welcome. This is Terry Saunders, and I'm here today with my team to talk to you and provide the Tivoli Talk for 2009 for Maximo for Utilities 711 and Maximo Spatial Asset Management 711. Both products will EGA this 18th of December, and I'm just happy to report that we are in the best situation I think we've ever been with a product release. So we're actually quite excited, quite pleased with where we've come at this point in the process of developing product. My role, of course, is to lead the product itself as far as in our design and our documentation support and development efforts. And I work, of course, with our marketing team and our sales team and coordinate with them. With me on the call today, we have Jerry Miller, who is also a product manager specifically for utilities, and he's really our chief product architect doing a lot of the designs for the product itself. I also have Gary Cooper on the call today, and he's really our product manager and chief architect for Spatial and does all the designs for Spatial. We have Ron Wallace on the call, which will fill in for any questions that we might want his input on. And, of course, Ron has been really helping in the utilities since Maximo first came on the scene many years ago. So he's got a long history working with utilities and helping with asset management, particularly with Maximo as a solution in that space. Kim Woodbury is the market management product manager for Spatial specifically. She's unable to join the call today, but her role is really to help with positioning and product pricing and sales questions and related to that. Diane Depew is also unable to join us today. She's really the sales lead overall for utilities. She's actually helping on opportunities in China at the moment. And so she helps and escort those sales, hopefully, to closure that we have in opportunities in the marketplace. The process that we're going to take today going through this presentation is hopefully all of you have gotten a copy of the PDF, which was sent out, which is much more consumable as far as size, and I'll be working through that presentation. We're going to hold questions to the end. We've got quite a bit of material to cover, and we'll make sure we say what page we're on as we proceed from one slide to the next. And there's a great deal of backup material there. Also, what was sent was an AVI file. Apologize for the size, but you know how those recordings can be as far as size. But it will give you a live demonstration that you can play and consume and review at your own leisure or provide that with other prospects and your own teams. And it really gives you an example, demonstration of how you use Spatial. There will be a number of those that will be recorded and become available. And then, of course, keep in mind that we, in addition to these Tivoli Talks, we have the T-Techs that are coming up. So we have a T-Tech, which is a detailed presentation starting tomorrow. And then next week we'll have a series of four T-Techs of details of Spatial. Two things I want to note, particularly about this product. The question comes up many times. Maximo for Utilities does include Maximo Spatial Asset Management. So when someone purchases a license for Maximo for Utilities, they also are entitled to Maximo Spatial Asset Management. It is a separate install. There's a very good reason for that. By having it be a separate install, the customer can decide when they're ready to proceed on and enable their GIS integration that they may have. So they may have completed their utilities implementation, gone live on that even, and we have many customers that actually manage their projects in this way. And then at such time, they can go ahead and install Maximo Spatial Asset Management. When it's installed, it actually comes out of the box as not being enabled, so that all the setup and all proper activity can be done to enable that application. But there are some customers that will choose to keep it GIS not enabled because they can take advantage of features that are in spatial asset management with utilities without necessarily integrating to GIS. And we'll talk about that through our presentation today, as well as the fact that it allows them to, since you're working with two systems in an enterprise, be able to work successfully. If one system has to be taken down for whatever maintenance reasons, you can continue to operate within Maximo. Going on to slide two, at this stage, I'm going to give you a little background about our solution for utilities and, of course, why do we develop a solution in the utility space. It's specifically to address those requirements of that particular industry. In this case, you're talking about electric, gas, and water, wastewater, for distribution primarily, transmission and distribution, a very large a part of any utility organization. Typically the largest number of people will be in that part of the organization actually, of course, touching and working with customers. This product supports the design, construction, and accounting for new infrastructure and utilities, and we provide really an integration framework with the TD adapter that allows you to support this different integration that may be required, and of course the Maximo Enterprise adapter is used like it traditionally is in our product. I'm happy to report we're the only vendor that's in the leaders quadrant of the Gartner's analysis of enterprise asset management, which really says a lot for the good work that all of you have been doing to progress our capabilities in that particular space. We first released a product back on version 4 with compatible unit estimating. And then, of course, we brought that up to version 5 and added actually crew management capabilities when we released our 6 product. So in addition to compatible unit estimating, there's management of crew in addition to individual labor. When we got to our 6th release, we added integration to GIS, to ESRI's ArcGIS server to help support that visualization within Maximo of all those assets that are geographically displaced and appearing across the service territory. And then, of course, in 7.1, which is now EGA'd last December as an individual product with a separate install, and now, of course, we're moving to 7.1.1, which will add the service address capabilities to help support premise and geocoding. So that's a pretty significant addition to the product. Of course, we support all of the main databases, and we work with our customers to deliver these solutions. Customers such as Detroit Edison, Baltimore Gas and Electric, Lakeland Electric, Duke Energy, Salt River Project, Colorado Springs Utilities, and I'll say that there's a whole other list of secondary customers that we also work with in developing and designing requirements for that customer and releasing to the market. Most important from our sales force, really, and our partners in the marketplace is understanding gaps that may exist in our solution to help successfully sell. So that's something we really want to close, is not just satisfy the needs of our current customers, but what are those challenges in the marketplace and those gaps that we need to really address through product to make them more effective overall. Moving on to slide 3, gives you an overview of the utility solution, which of course specifically looks at both asset and work management in the transmission distribution space. So we really look to help them more effectively manage their resources across all their asset classes, you know, combining this in the utilities so that they might be using the nuclear solution in a nuclear power plant. They might be using just regular Maximo asset management, supporting their hydro generation and their steam generation, perhaps even in transmission. They may be using the actual transportation solution to manage these large fleets that they have. And, of course, they may be using our utility solution, particularly in the distribution space. So it really allows them to address all aspects of work management, all assets across their enterprise. With the compatible unit estimating application, they're able to, of course, create estimates and multi-design library so that they can maintain consistency of their design and construction throughout their service territory. They're able to manage their crew types, the makeup of that crew, the tracking of labor skills, certificates, and any vehicles that may be associated with that crew. And, of course, we support fixed asset accounting and mobile workforce management and graphic design through that TD adapter, which is actually available for the customer then to extend to their specific solutions that they may be using from various vendors to support that. As I mentioned, Maximo Spatial is included in the product with utilities, but it also can be sold as an add-on. So there might be a government entity, a city, that may not be using the utility solution, but they may benefit, of course, from having the ability to use Maximo Spatial because they do manage their assets across large geographic service territories. So in that case, it would be sold as an add-on. And then, of course, all of this is integrated into asset management functionality on a modern architecture. Moving to slide 4, I want to say a little bit about what's in this current release. And then from there, I'll turn it over to Jerry Miller, who will get to the details of the utilities portion of this application of the industry solution. And then I'll turn it over to Gary Cooper from there, and he'll get into the spatial details. So essentially, as I mentioned, we become EGA availability on December 18th. We actually went to code freeze last Friday. We released to manufacturing this Friday, and we will be having that product available, EGA, on December 18th as specified. We did many things to improve what I'll call both performance and usability in this particular release as a theme of the release itself. So we made many enhancements to help improve the CUE perform acceptance and made UI improvements that we got from our customers about ways that the application could flow more effectively. And that was really quite important, and we've got some numbers I'll tell you about that show dramatic improvement in the performance and the usage of for our customers. We then went on and took advantage of a capability as an add-on that we have for scheduling that was released really this past August and into September. So there'll be another release coming out in March of next year. And what we did is that the scheduling application, which supported CPM for crews and provides a Gantt view, we made that capable not only just for individual labor, but to support the design of crews that we have in the utilities application. We added the service address capability as an application and also added that to locations and assets and service requests and work orders to support geocoding. So that with an address, you could actually locate that particular asset on a map, on the map tab on those particular applications. And, of course, many of our customers with their customer information systems, we found over the years, were making these additions to those applications to help support that flow of information coming from the customer system. So this allows some consistency and continuity as a core release capability in the product. With actual spatial asset management installed in utilities solution, we've really improved the user experience by having the ability to auto-create and auto-locate work orders and service requests. We added something called polygon selection sets so that you could actually, let's say, draw on a map a polygon. It might be a series of poles, and you can decide that you want to, you know, create a work order on each one of those assets or each one of those poles, or create a work order for all of those together as one work order, and maybe you're doing a joint use inspection as an example, and we'll get into more details and examples of that as we go through the presentation today. It now supports single-click linking, so you can associate those records in Maximo to those assets in GIS. You're able to more easily distinguish assets and locations in the way that they're highlighted in this release. We've extended the GIS admin capabilities to define the user map services by a site, and that's really quite important because as you look at supporting multi-geo databases, it allows a customer to segregate that information that they might make available across service territory. So a service center that operates in the state of Iowa wouldn't need to see those details of that work that might be occurring in Illinois or in Wisconsin or other neighboring service territory states. Likewise, you may divide up those map services and that geodatabase information based on the work group. So the water and wastewater group wouldn't be needing to see all that detail that's involved with the electric crews or the gas crews. So that gives a great deal of capability in this release. And, of course, this release supports ArcGIS Server 9.3.1. ESRI will be releasing a service pack for 9.3.1 called Service Pack 1. It's not released yet, but we'll be releasing shortly after our release. And, of course, we will then deliver a fixed pack with some additional enhancements and support for that particular service pack from ESRI. The most significant thing from a development standpoint in this release on the spatial side is that we moved or migrated the technology from the WebADF to what's called the JavaScript REST API at the advice of ESRI and our own development teams. And I've been happy to report that we've seen just dramatic improvements in both the visual appearance, larger screen real estate, as well as the performance of the map displays. It's just a tremendous improvement of like 50%. So then from there, I'm going to transition to slide 5, and I'd like to turn it over to Jerry Miller, who will walk through explaining the details of the utilities release and the capabilities we have. Thank you, Jerry.
Thank you, Terry. Good morning, all. This is Jerry Miller. I am going to review in detail the three major areas of enhancements for this release. They are compatible unit estimating, the service address functions in the work order, as well as a few other related applications, and then lastly, the scheduler enhancements. And I think it's important to understand that today's presentation is intended to be a high-level overview of the new features in just this release. If you require additional details or a demo, you can access the Tivoli Technical Educational Exchange, for short, that's the TTEC, or the TTEC from our previous release has a nice demonstration and overview of the complete business process using the utility solution. So those are important references for you that we won't really have the opportunity to cover today. I will explain for those of you not familiar with our utility solution. Compatible unit estimating is designed to estimate labor, materials, services, and tools for a project or a work order. It is designed to be used prior to the work order being approved so that an accurate cost of the work order can be determined and the appropriate approval process can be implemented for that work order. The second area of enhancements is the service address functionality, which the service address was added to primarily the work order tracking application, but also the asset application, the service request, and the locations application. It was designed in order to allow geocoding, which Terry alluded to, which basically just allows the work order to be positioned on a map somewhere. It also supports future integration with a CIS or CRM application. This feature, as Terry mentioned, is included in the spatial solution, so it's important to understand that that separate installation is necessary, but these features are very, very valuable to our utility customers. The third area that I'm going to cover today in detail is the scheduler application, which is a new application which is designed to use existing information that's already in work order tracking. That's all the plans details, that's whatever date details, that's the task dependency details, and allow the user to graphically view and manipulate these details in a different way. We feel like the UI makes a huge difference for our users used to the tables and fields and columns view. The graphical view is just a whole lot easier to work with, and it is a lot more intuitive in working with that. It's important to realize this is the first time an industry solution has actually extended a core product add-on. Scheduler is a product add-on, so that's a separate licensable event. And there are some additional steps to properly configure the two to work together in our install guide. So I just want to bring to your attention that those exist. And when you have a customer that licenses both Scheduler as a product add-on as well as the Maximo for Utility solution, you do want to direct them towards the install guide to make sure that everything works out. Okay, so moving on to slide 6, we're going to delve down into the detail of what did we do to compatible unit estimating. These enhancements were primarily a result of listening to our existing customers who are currently using our application in very aggressive ways, and larger estimates we found were taking a little too long in perform estimate and perform acceptance. Those are two critical steps that happen with every single estimate. And so we found that we could go in and improve the performance of those two actions. And we basically reduced things down to about a third of their time in the current release. And so the future releases will be a lot faster, which should allow customers to effectively work with much larger estimates and make better use of their designer's time. We also focused a lot on ease of use. I've moved on to slide 7. We found that we have a lot of rich, detailed features, and we found that many organizations had trouble actually using some of our advanced concepts because they were difficult to use. They would train their users, and then in the process of day-to-day life, some of that knowledge would be lost. And as a result, they weren't able to accurately use some of our rich features. So we purposed to simplify the look and feel, trying to group information a little bit more logically so that the user would see what they were working with, and hopefully the other related fields would come to their attention as being required or needing to be updated. We used quite a bit of non-persistent fields, which just simply means that the user is doing a lot more manipulation while everything is in memory, possibly before things are committed to the database. We also worked to reduce work sets, which work set was primarily a database concept. It was something we did for the efficiency of our database, but it made it a little bit harder for the user to understand what that was. And so Maximo now will automatically create that work set. It will determine whether or not it's needed from what the user does online. So the user is doing what they know, which is, I know what field conditions are needed for this particular compatible unit, and then Maximo in the background is figuring out whether the work set records are needed or not. We also made a change. We have a screen that will allow the user to look at all of the compatible units related to a single estimate version. And so in this way, it's more of an overview screen, and it's much easier to compare if all of the compatible units were properly selected for that particular estimate. And then lastly, we looked at some of the error messages and some of the most common error messages that were reported into our support organization, and tried to improve the detail that we actually give to the user. So we try and explain in plain English form what the error was, and then guide the user how to resolve it. The hope here was to give the user the exact information that they needed when they needed it, thereby reducing the need to make the calls into support, but also making that user more efficient because they're able to solve their own problem. I'm going to move on to slide 8 now and talk a little bit more. One of the side benefits of redesigning our WorkSep concept was making our integration to graphical design tools much better. In the past, we found that that our database invention of WorkSep is really not commonly seen. We didn't see that at all in any of the graphical design tools, and so that made integration a little bit of a challenge. And we found that by making this change online for the user and making things simpler for them, it also makes integration simpler, because now the graphical design tool can simply tell us what compatible units are involved on a particular estimate, and it can also tell us what those field conditions are, and thereby Maxima will figure out if a new workset is created. It allows the graphical design tool to just focus on the way that they're probably doing business today. Okay, I am going to move on to slide 9. Bear with me just a second. I'm moving on to the next slide. You will notice service address on slide 9. You're going to see this slide again. We felt it was important to remind our utility users that this was primarily a utility requirement, and then realized that there's great benefit in delivering it into in a spatial solution. So again, the service address tab on the work order will only display when spatial has actually been installed. And so the address on the work order has a couple of features to it. One of which is when you add an asset or a location that already has a address associated with it, the address will automatically be copied into the work order. There's a system setting that allows the address to be broken down into the individual components. This is commonly called a parsed address. And that parsed address concept supports the ability to do street name validations or a range of address validations. So there's a lot of additional configuration that our customers can do by having a parsed address. This also allows future integration with a CIS or CRM application. I'm going to move on to slide 10, which is the scheduler enhancements. The scheduler enhancements begin on the work order tracking application. A number of new date fields have been added, the start no earlier than or the finish no later than. These are fields that basically are associated with the critical path of the work order. And so these can be calculated by the scheduler application, and then they're actually updated to the work order tracking application. The work order can also be excluded from the Gantt view if for some reason this is an administrative work order and you don't want this particular work order to show up in any queries on scheduler. And then we also made a change that we calculate duration from the effort hours on the plans tab. For those of you that have worked with our crew functionality in the past, you realize the number of hours that are required is in order to calculate duration, you have to understand the number of resources that are usually associated with that crew to actually calculate a reasonable duration calculation. So it's important to understand that utilities does support the extension of the scheduling application. The scheduler application, of course, is a separate licensable event, so both products must be licensed and then must be installed correctly in order to see some of these changes. It's also important to realize that the existing interfaces with Microsoft Project and Primavera will continue to be supported. Scheduler is another opportunity for customers to use our software, but we're not going to force them to move away from Microsoft Project or Primavera if these tools are already in use in the organization. So each customer can make their own decision about how they will use some of this the CPM type applications. So moving on to slide 11 is a screenshot of the main screen of the scheduler application. And basically, this is an application that's designed to define a project or a group of work orders and then the resource pool that will be performing the work. The application displays the project as a Gantt view and then can calculate the CPM dates, as well as allow the user to update those dates with the goal of really levelizing the work and levelizing the resources to basically fill up a bucket, if you will, whether it's a week of work or a month of work, and make sure that the resources and the work orders are aligned so that the work can actually be accomplished in that time frame. A typical use case would be to look at all the work that needs to be performed by a work group such as a service center, and then compare that to the resources that are expected to be available at that service center during that time. In Maximo fashion, they can define as many queries as necessary. You can actually copy queries from the work order application or from your labor or crew applications in order to use the common queries that you've already defined. Those can be copied into this application as a common set to look at. Moving on to slide 12 is an actual screenshot of the graphical view of Scheduler. And there's a lot of rich features here. I'm just going to highlight a couple of the most common. Task dependencies are actually defined in the job plans application and can be copied to the work order when the work order is created. Those task dependencies are then defined here. The good news is that you can actually edit those task dependencies, whether it's delete or add new ones. You can graphically not only see those, but then also create new dependencies as they are needed. Then, of course, a CPM calculation can be run based on those task dependencies and based on the durations that are defined in the work order application. The user has complete capability to edit the start dates and the end dates, as well as the durations associated with those tasks. And so they really get the complete calendar view in a graphical way and can make any updates necessary from this particular screen. The user can run multiple what-if scenarios. Until one is found that's acceptable, they can save their work, they can come back and work on this the next day, and they will choose when all of the work orders are actually updated. So, you know, the what-if scenarios might take, you know, a multiple attempts at figuring out the schedule until finally one schedule is chosen, and then all those dates can be committed back to the work orders, and the work orders are updated. The user can also drill down on the resources to see the number of resources that will be available. As you can see in the bottom of this screen, we call the bottom half of the screen the resource curve. So this is the number of resources that are going to be demanded based on the work orders that you've selected from above. And you can see the total number demanded, but then it's also useful to drill down into those individual resources to see the number that are actually available. And so by looking at the resources demanded by the resources available, is in a graphical formation, this can alert the scheduler to a need to shift work orders or authorize overtime or employ contractors in order to get all of the work done in the particular time frame. And then the last feature I wanted to highlight, which this application does have an ability to support configuration. Columns can be moved around. There's a number of options that are available. There's actually an action from the action menu that allows configuration. And there's actually a number of additional features that are very beneficial that we are going to show a little bit more in the T-Tech. We're actually going to do a demonstration that'll be available shortly where we actually do a demonstration of some of these features. So moving on to slide 13 is just a little bit more detail on some of the primary business cases. We expect this application to assist the user in their work to be done in a particular time frame, whether it's a week, a month, or a quarter, and the process of evaluating the work and the resources should help make the overtime and the contractor determinations. The hope is that the workload can be matched with the available resources, and we feel like the graphical format really supports the user's ability to make a much better schedule. The top half of the screen is really the work list, which is displaying all the work orders and tasks that were defined for that project, which was the very first tab when you came into the application. And then the top right of that screen was what we call the Gantt view, which, of course, again, displays those task dependencies and allows everything to be edited and supports drag and drop of moving those dates. And then, of course, those new dates can be committed by saving everything back into the work order. Moving on to slide 14 is just a little bit more detail on the resource view. Of course, the resource view displays all of the resources that were required on those selected work orders. Additional resource pools can be included. That's a feature when you first come into the application to define which resources and which work orders you'd like to see. You can also look at, for example, if you're working with one service center, a resource pool from one service center. You can also look at that same group of workers from a neighboring service center, so you get the idea of whether or not the other service center is overloaded and the possibility of moving work orders around. And then the resources demanded, that's actually a feature you really need to check out the T-TECH for. When you click on the actual resources, you'll see the number of resources required versus the number of resources that are available for that time period. And again, it's very easy for the user to identify where the peaks and valleys are to where they might want to shift resources around. Moving on to slide 15 is my last slide with you. There were a number of features that were added to Maximo Asset Management, sometimes called Core Maximo, which 7116 is the release that's coming out in December. That will be the release that our utilities solution will be built on top of. So there will be a number of new enhancements in that release that we just wanted to draw to your attention. One has to do with classifications and some more robust searching capabilities for classifications. And CUs are an object that fully use the classifications functionality. And so now there's a new attribute searching capability that allows the user to search the entire CU library by a particular attribute or by a particular attribute value. We see this as a very powerful feature that we expect our utility users to use while they're trying to estimate in compatible unit estimating. We expect them to search the CU library using this attribute search capability. A quick use case would be if a gas designer is looking for a valve that fits a particular 4-inch cast iron main, that they would use the attribute searching dialog to display all the CUs that are for use on, for example, a 4-inch cast iron pipe. There's just a myriad of possibilities here. Whatever attributes are used within the CU library, all of them or any of them could be used for searching. So the expected business value would be to really help the user find the right CU quicker and hopefully reduce errors and, you know, really make a large CU library a lot smaller by, you know, reducing the subset of CUs just down to the group that could be potentially used in that application. There's some other enhancements in Base Maximo that are not directly related to our Maximo for Utility solution, but they have consistently come up from some of our customers that these are desired features that they would like to see. One is an enhancement to the integration framework, what was previously called the MIA. There's a web services interaction application that allows the user to set up a web service directly through the UI of Maximo. And there's some testing capabilities in there that make it a lot more robust and a lot easier to set those up. There's ITM for Maximo. This is part of the monitoring solution to Maximo. And then lastly is Cognos report integration will be released for this particular release of Maximo 7116. So there are some additional features, but these are sort of the top three or four that we've heard customers ask specifically about. So I would encourage you to check out some of the information that's available for the release that's coming out in December from Core Maximo. And at that point, I thank you for listening. I'm going to turn you over to Terry Saunders, where he's going to pick up on slide 16 of the spatial solution.
Thanks, Jerry, for that overview. Just to remind everybody that tomorrow is actually the T-TECH that will take place for utilities, where Jerry will be able to go into much more detail on all those specific capabilities that he described in the talk today. So now I want to spend some time drilling down into the spatial asset management part of the utilities solution. Again, it's an individual install. It can also be sold as an add-on by itself. Gary Cooper is the product manager and also the chief product architect for this solution. We also have Kim Woodbury, who works from market management to help address those issues that come up with the positioning and product pricing and those sorts of things. And then there's a few other names I'm going to introduce you at the end of this presentation. We have a GBS unit, a whole group that really is skilled at doing these kinds of installs for customers to support spatial asset management. Don Finhagen leads that group. And we also have Rob Culp, who really helps with the alliance or relationship that we have with ESRI and can help connect salespeople to their counterparts in ESRI and help actually close an opportunity that may exist, which is quite important if you're working with a customer that already is using ArcGIS Server and it's an opportunity for Maximo or vice versa. So working together with those teams really helps to ensure a successful close on that particular opportunity. So now if you move on to the next slide, which is slide 17, I want to talk a little bit about this solution and what makes it really so helpful, the fact that it's a single solution. Never before had a customer had the opportunity really as a product to bring these two together. So it really allows our Maximo users to have access to that geospatial data to really more easily understand and visualize relationships. When you're planning work and planning assets, you can actually see the roads that intersect or are near those particular assets, any buildings or pipelines that might be affected, understanding one-ways or traffic patterns or even accessibility that may be limited due to the particular location of those assets along a mountain range or along a river or stream, or understanding that those assets are within a right-of-way. All of this is very important when you're looking at doing work across assets which are geographically dispersed and trying to be the most efficient in delivering service to those assets. It's a real-time integration to ESRI's ArcGIS Server 931 in this release. And IBM has had quite a long relationship with ESRI, who is really the market leader in this space. It's amazing if you go to their user conference that takes place in San Diego, you can see upwards of 15,000 people that participate in that event. They're very, very well-run events, and we aligned with their technical vision, and they aligned with ours, and we work very closely, of course, with our sales and our implementation support. So this relationship has gone back well past 5 years. That we've been working with them, and this is now our third release that we've done to Maximo Spatial. And along with the times, we adjusted our technology as the best technology became available of doing this particular release on really supporting the REST API. Moving on to slide 18, I want to talk a little bit about this particular release. So in addition to being designed specifically to be enabled with Maximo for utilities, there's another industry solution, oil and gas, who also ensured that they could easily consume the Maximo Spatial Asset Management product. Of course, that's quite natural that in the oil and gas industry you could have assets that are widely dispersed. Now, other industry solutions can be supported. It's defined in our documentation on how that's actually done to ensure that it displays in those particular work orders that may be and assets that are used particularly, let's say, for the transportation industry solution itself. And, of course, it works over the core Maximo product, so that's pretty important. So we've really delivered an integration framework in our release where the customer and or our services can take advantage of extending that even further for their particular business needs or for their industry's needs. For the first time, this allows Maximo users to really see that rich GIS data that they've actually developed within their GIS system. And likewise, the GIS people are able to see the business data and the work management and asset data associated with Maximo by having access to the Maximo application. It really supports the ability to, like I said, to visualize the context of work and asset and all those relevant land-based features that you're going to have to deal with in the real world to effectively manage that work. Very, very important in terms of the planning aspects and delivery, and particularly even in terms of, I'll say, emergency response to understand what it is that you're having to manage. One thing that's very important about this release and adding spatial is that it adds a capability that didn't before exist without this visual representation, and that is the ability to create a work order, which is really a polygon. So you may draw a work order for vegetation management, identifying the extent of where those vegetation contracting crews are actually supposed to work along a corridor to remove and perhaps do tree trimming away from critical power lines. And so that polygon can be drawn on the map, really identifying clearly the boundaries of that work. That can be attached as a PDF to the work order even and sent to that particular contractor. So it's very clear on the work that's being requested, and the completion of the work is maintained in history for that. Likewise, like I said, you could identify right-of-ways, you could identify parts of a, let's say, a major parking lot or at an airport that might be resurfaced, or part of a major building structure roof that may be actually being repaired, and not the entire roof. It may be a whole section which might even represent as large as an acre or two, but not the entire territory of that roof. So that's a really key capability of being able to create these polygons associated with a work order and define that particular boundaries of the work that is required. Moving on to slide 19, I'm just emphasizing the wide appeal of GIS, Geographical Information Systems, and how they might be used to support water, wastewater call center. They might be used for tracing, looking at the electrical design, where the communication towers are, the buildings, the actual cell phone coverage, the network. So there's a vast use that a customer will use GIS for in terms of their analysis and planning and the infrastructure build-out. And then with having Maximo integrated to that, you can take advantage of that with the asset and the work management portions. Moving on to slide 20, emphasizing again that this release will EGA on December 18th. The major thing that we've done, of course, here is we've migrated our technology to the JavaScript REST API, and QA has actually validated, really a 50% improvement in this release, and that's particularly as you look at the quick and rapid display of map content as you move throughout the application. There's a much cleaner look and feel as in the way that we've actually opened up a lot more of the screen real estate to be able to view the map. And we've really expanded on core capabilities of Maximo. We're taking advantage of Maximo's inherent capabilities of security, application configuration, conditional UI, the whole integration framework. So we've really taken advantage of that in this release so that that can be used with the GIS integration. We did a full beta program. That beta program involved customers and business partners and GBS. And I'm really happy to report that we've had some wonderful responses from that beta program and from these live demos where we did live demonstrations at the Maximo Utility Working Group. We also did four other live beta demonstrations with different customers and business partners. And I point this out on slide 21, the next slide there, so that you can see some of the good responses we've gotten from customers and business partners. And I bring this out because I know for some of you, the whole GIS integration is technically complex. Has been, and performance in previous releases, some were concerned about that, about the tiling of the actual map displays. And really with this release, we've gone that extra step where you'll see, Salt River Project, when they looked at it, they just said it really looks like a natural part of Maximo. All the way to comments that you see down there, like by the city of Austin, where they've just said, you know what, this just is light years ahead of previous releases. In fact, they're quite excited about this release and intend to move forward on it very quickly. So I provide these quotes for you to realize that even though today it's in beta and it'll be released on the 18th, it performed very well in the beta release in front of live customer demonstrations. Now, these aren't quotes that you could use, from the customer. We don't have the permission to be able to actually do that in the marketing aspects, but I wanted you to let you know about the positive responses we're seeing and how some customers have elected to right away move with this release in their implementation. Such as the city of Chesapeake has immediate plans to take this release and go live with it very early next year. They're quite excited about that. The city of Austin is going to move into this quite soon. We've got NT Power and Water in Australia that has been working on their conference room pilot and their blueprint phase, and they've now progressed on, and they're going to be taking this release and moving that into a production state quite rapidly. So I guess the hard work and the improvement of technology shows that it's working for us. Moving on to slide 22, I just want to review for you some internal confidential information about the technical, the pricing guidelines. What's very important is that ESRI ArcGIS Server 9.3 no longer requires Enterprise Advanced. So it will work with Enterprise Advanced, but it will also work with their product Enterprise Standard. So that's an important aspect. The other thing to point out is that with this release, it's not designed to support mixed database environments. And what I mean by that is that when customers decide to actually integrate their applications across the enterprise, one of the things that they will tend to do is decide on a standard database. So So whether they are deciding that DB2 is going to be their standard underlying database across these applications, or SQL Server or Oracle, that's normally the decision that's made across an enterprise to really support this rich integration. And so that's the way this product is designed. It's designed that if Maximo is on DB2, then ESRI is running on DB2, or if Maximo is running on Oracle, then it's expecting that ESRI is running on Oracle. And the same is true, of course, with a SQL Server to best take advantage of spatial data types. All these products have been extended to support this whole spatial data types and supporting geography. So that's why that's been designed that way. If you look at the pricing, you'll see that the IBM list price is displayed there for authorized users. There are no secondary users that are done with industry solutions. And, of course, the Maximo for Utilities product does include spatial asset management. Now, if the customer were purchasing spatial asset management by itself, let's say it's an airport taking advantage of this, or a government facility, then they would just buy Maximo Spatial Asset Management as an add-on, and the pricing there is displayed. Very important to point out that in some of the industries, such as water, wastewater, keep in mind that although a lot of the capability we've designed for utilities started off being focused on electric and then gas, we have taken into account the needs of water, wastewater groups, and will take more of those needs into account as we further build out the solution. So there's a real advantage for those customers who truly are a utility to buy the utility product, industry solution product, which will have for them crew capabilities, as well as the spatial asset management product, as opposed to just buying the spatial asset management product as an add-on by itself. Moving from there to slide 23, we're going to talk a little bit about the architecture of this product for spatial asset management, and I'm going to turn it over to well-qualified architect and product management, Gary Cooper.
Thanks, Terry. My name is Gary Cooper. I am the product manager and primary architect for Maximo Spatial. And I'll start the slide deck on slide 23 here with an overall architectural view of both the Maximo and Esri applications. And some of our high-level objectives have certainly been to provide a very consumable and usable products, which will continue to move in those directions and resolving the challenges related to that. But also interoperability has been a challenge and something that is one of our high and priority objectives for Maximo Spatial. So in the diagram, you can see that the Maximo on the left side, the ArcGIS server, and the Esri components on the right side of the diagram. And part of the differences here from the previous release, you'll notice in the ArcGIS side, is the REST API. And we also use some of the Dojo library components with JavaScript. And the two ellipses that you see there, the pink and the green, is really the beginning of our move to provide spatial and interoperability or interoperable configuration. And what I mean by that is that we have a lot of customers out there that support different GIS platforms in some cases, even within the same organization. We have some that support other than Esri GIS platforms, so that we want to keep moving towards a configuration that we can support the consumption of these other GIS platforms. But right now, Esri is our primary platform. And the other thing that this diagram indicates is that we're actually moving away from a lot of direct ARC object calls to perform different database operations. And as everyone knows, that all the database vendors now are moving towards more spatially capable databases, as evidenced in SQL Server 2008 with your geometry data types, and Oracle with spatial, well as DB2 with spatial extender. So we really are beginning to do some of these things at the database level, which, again, creates at least a certain amount of independence to say that we really don't have to have this particular component, that we can do a lot of these actions directly at the database level. Moving on to slide 24. we had some high-level requirements that came up a year or so ago, and this was primarily coming from some of our very large customers where maybe it's a utility that operates in multiple states in North America, or maybe it's some other branch of our armed services that has a global responsibility for facilities. And what they were wanting was really to really get beyond a single database, and they really wanted to be able to define these different geographies independently inside the Maximo spatial configuration and do this by site identity. So what we've added in this release is this configuration capabilities, and there's a new application called Map Manager, and in that you can define sites to consume different map services. Those map services can be pointing to different geodatabases with no real limitation to the number of databases or the number of geodatabases that you can support. Terry gave some good examples earlier, and in the case of this utility, again, the use case supporting this would be I've got 9 different operating groups in 9 different states in North America. And each one of those has their own separate Esri geodatabase with their geographical data, and I'd like to provide a unique map presentation and content to each of those 9 geographies. Moving on to slide 25, service address. One of the things that is probably most pervasive and common throughout most customers is addresses. One is I use an address to identify the location of a problem, and I also use that same address to help crews navigate to that asset or to that problem location to effect the repairs. So we thought it was appropriate that we make this a natural part of the Maximo records, and that's work orders, service requests, asset, and locations, because certainly within service areas, a common way of identifying address or asset locations is an address, or even location identities. Again, not required, but it is another way of actually providing a way to locate these assets on a map or locate a general vicinity related to location identities. Again, locations could be site boundaries, they could be parks, they could be campuses, whatever you want, and then even within those location or those site identities, you could have more granular location information, such as an address attached to the actual asset within that campus or site. The addresses are part of a new application that we've added to Maximo called Service Address, and that application does function as an address repository for those cleaned up and structured addresses that can be added to any of the Maximo records that we described the assets or listed the assets. And what it does, it provides a address consistency in these records. Again, the use case supporting this is that when I search for things in Maximo and I'm searching asset records and location records and work order and service request records, I really would like to have a very good rate of return for a query that I do when it's based on an address. So the more consistent I can make my addressing in these records when I search for records in Maximo by address, the better my rate of return on these result sets will be. Moving on to slide 26. This is just some additional information regarding the service addresses. The things that might be noteworthy here are we do have a new service address tab in the application, which has an extensive breakdown of the address, components being parsed in the underlying database tables. We have reference fields in there that can describe a reference of that address, maybe to a milepost or something, some other type of landmark. That record structure contains coordinate pairs in the event you're working in very remote areas where you don't even have anything to associate an address to for the asset, then you could just use coordinate pairs as part of the address information supplied for that asset location or work order. Moving on to slide 27. The problem statement here was this, and this came back from some of the early releases of Spatial, was that I queried for work orders in Maximo based on various criteria, and I may have gotten 20 resulting records from my query. And when I went to the map, I was only seeing 10 of those plotted on the map. Well, the problem was that if all of those work orders created in Maximo didn't have a GIS feature created for it, such as a point, a polygon, or a line, then there was nothing to map to in the map when you went to the map tab. So we've added some new functionality called auto-locate. And what this does is it eliminates the dependency on requiring a GIS feature to be linked to a Maximo record to show that on the map. So the way it works today or in the release for this December is that if I have a work order, for example, and I didn't put an asset, a location, or create a GIS feature for that work order, I only put an address in the work order. When I go to the map tab or open the map views, it will Windows Center to that particular address. So I still have a way of getting to that work location, even though I don't have any of these other GIS objects referenced in the work order itself. Now, in the case that I put an asset in there and it has a GIS feature linked to it, again, the work order can also navigate based on that asset's location or a location identity in the work order and so on. So what it does, it looks through the work order and tries to find any piece of information or any item referenced in the work order to get a map position and show you the location of that work event. And again, the work orders, there's a minor logic for inheriting addresses from different items referenced in the work orders. The use case being here, I created the work order, I put in an address that was provided by someone in the field or a customer, and now I've got some information stating the specific asset that's involved here that needs to be visited. And I add that to the work order. It has a different address, and there's a series of prompting that will prompt the operator to inherit the new or different address from that asset and make that part of the work order at this point. So there's just a way of continuing to refine addressing to provide a more exact geographical location based on this method of inheritance. Moving on to slide 28. Again, some additional information about the auto-locate. There's specific symbology, which is noteworthy in that if you do not have a GIS a feature that's linked to the work order or service request, it places the little arrow that has an orange fill to it in the location marker or the star. And that's just a visual cue or an indication that this has been auto-located in. Doesn't necessarily have a GIS feature related to it. Slide 29 is another enhancement called auto-create. And what the use case here was that we have a lot of cases where there's a bulk set of work orders that are generated. And we'll just use the example of a PM where I have a date trigger. And that date trigger is generating a bulk series or set of work orders. And I want to create a GIS feature for those work orders. So I've got a PM trigger that occurred. It generated 50 work orders in the Maximo work order application. And I want to generate a GIS feature to mark the map location of those work orders and provide labeling for those. So this auto-create functionality will allow me to generate a set of records in the list tab, and a select actions menu option has been added to auto-create these GIS symbols for the work orders, which will go through those. It will place the work order feature in the map, again, using anything that's in the map, such as an asset location or an address, and then it will label that and link that to the Maximo work order. So at that point, you have both the GIS feature for that work order as well as the Maximo work order record complete with the link information. And there is some a minor amount of setup that's required for that in the Map Manager application where you can identify the GIS feature to place for the auto-create as well as the column to use for the label that's placed in the map. Moving on to slide 30. Again, I want to emphasize that a lot of our higher level objectives for this release was usability, it was performance, it was really trying to begin to let Maximo drive a lot of the interactions with the map instead of just doing things with the map and kind of then moving to Maximo and doing some things. We really wanted to begin to bake in some of these business processes. So you'll see that, for example, creating a new work order, I might start in Maximo. I create a new work order record. I'm selecting a feature. I'm opening map views. I'm using tools within the map. I'm putting polygons around things. And then I'm actually able to select and filter the items inside the polygon. Because in some cases, you may draw a polygon on a map over a very large area, and there may be some things selected that I don't actually want to include in the work order. So you have the ability to eliminate those by selecting the ones from a list that you want to add and leaving the ones that unchecked that you want to exclude from the actual work order. The polygon selection sets was part of that, was making these bulk or mass selections from the map without really doing any queries in Maximo and being able to list the features that it found inside the polygons and then make a conscious selection of the ones that I actually wanted to make part of the work order. This particular slide, or there's two places this can occur. One is in the asset application. You can make map selections. You can create, you have four options to create work order or service request records from the asset application. The choices are you can create a work order containing all the selections from the map. You can create one work order for each selection made from the map. You can create a master work order and child work orders for each selection made in the map, or I can add all the map selections to a service request. Again, this is done from the asset application. There's prompts that will actually complete this action, ask if you want a hyperlink over to work orders where you can review those work orders, fill in any additional information, and then return to the asset application. Continuing to slide 31 is, again, this is just the work order side of the polygon selection set functionality. Again, one of the requirements or one of the things that we heard over and over again from a lot of customers is that sometimes it's just easier to select things from the map. And one of the use cases driving that would be in Maximo, maybe I've got my assets in Maximo, but trying to figure out which one of those I really want to make an inspection work order for when it's described like this, that I want you to inspect all the poles on the east side of Main Street between 1st Street and 3rd Street. Well, it may be a little bit difficult just looking at text and forms and fields to figure out which of those records I should select, but the map view makes that very simple. I can go to the map, I can navigate to that particular geography of that street and those intersections. I can draw polygons around those objects. I can use my filtering to filter out the things that I don't want in the polygon selection and then make that part of my new work order that I'm going to create. Again, back to addressing some of the usability challenges is that we created a very simple way of creating a relationship between a GIS feature and a Maximo record. So the use case here might be that I have some records, asset records in Maximo asset table. My GIS text had just added some new GIS features in the map, and now I want to create the relationship between those using the key values. And it's a matter of displaying the Maximo record, selecting the GIS feature, and telling it to link, and the forms there kind of give you the process. And the values are exchanged, and I'm done. Now, we have a cron process to do bulk or when there's a mass number of records to be processed in this fashion, but if there's a few to be done or if a link wants to be created, then this is a very simple process to support that. Again, as Terry mentioned earlier, we can layer Maximo security over all of these options to manage whether this functionality is enabled or disabled for a group of users within a site. Moving on to slide 33, we continue to support some simple query tools inside the map view so that there's two forms of this, one that it's just single field, single type of query you can create. Another one allows you to create a little more extensive where clause for the query, and those are on the flip side of the dialogues that are inside the map view. But the things that I also want to point out on this particular slide, if you'll notice in the map view part of this image, there's some push pins, and the heads of those push pins are a green color. And one of the ways you have of visualizing or differentiating features on the map that are linked to a Maximo record or not, if the push pin has a green fill in the head, that means it's linked to a Maximo record. Okay, if the push pin has a gray fill on the head, that means it's a GIS feature, but it's not linked to any Maximo record. The same with the polygons. The polygons will be a dull gray color if they're not linked. If they are linked, then they'll be a color fill. Slide 34. We've added some very simple red line tools to the map view so that if you have a particular map extent and let's say you're creating a work order in this case, I need to add some notes. I need to highlight some things by drawing a shape around it and coloring it. I need to add some coordinate values to the map, and let's say that I've got particular points on the map that I want to provide a coordinate pair. In the case of I'm out in a remote area, I don't have addresses or anything where I can tell this person where to put this particular asset or where the asset is, but they do have GPS so they can navigate to items. So the red line tools allow you to do that type of kind of an acetate overlay, you could call it, or just a simple way of making notations on the screen and bringing attention to things. As you can see there, some things are highlighted, some things have some notations, some things are being pointed to. Now, these red line features, they do not persist in this particular release. That will change in the future, but the way you would retain or save the markups that you do in the map would be to use the PDF attached document, so I can take this map extent and I can generate my red line markups on that, and I can generate my PDF, which would make that map extent then a linked document to that Maximo work order and could become part of the work order package. And the final slide is in regards to the cron. We've mentioned that briefly, but the use case here is sometimes I have a few GIS features I may want to link to Maximo records. In other cases, my GIS techs have generated dozens or even hundreds of new GIS features relative to maybe a new capital project. Maybe it's a line extension or maybe a new subdivision with all kind of new features, hydrants, water lines, transformers, et cetera. And in this case, the cron would probably be the more appropriate tool. This is just in Maximo's terms, a scheduled job that runs based on a time frame that you set in the cron application. And there's a specific field that we add to the GIS tables. And if that field is valued in a certain way, then the cron will see that GIS record. It will create, if the conditions are right, I should say, in other words, there's not a duplicate, or if the GIS feature is, for example, classed an asset-type feature, it will create an asset record in Maximo. It'll exchange the linked values for that and then process, again, the remaining GIS features that have this field set to a value of 1. Again, it will look for duplicates, so even if the field value is left set, it won't reprocess those and recreate duplicate records. And in this release, one of the enhancements was to look at the relationship. And this means simply that if I had an existing column in my GIS features that was already the asset ID for that, I really don't have to add an extra column and add another asset number to that record. I could just point to that and say, okay, when you create a new record, then use this particular asset number in my GIS record. As Terry mentioned before, we had some very high-priority objectives in this release, and I am very, very pleased. I think we've met all those, from performance to usability. The product works very well within Maximo. It's very supportive of Maximo where a map makes sense, in that the map views it open, making your selections, making things part of Maximo records. So we're very excited about this release. As Terry said, it will be out on December the 18th as part of the 7.1.1 release on Core Maximo 7.1.1.6. Back to you, Terry.
Okay, thanks, Gary. That was a very good overview of the current release. Let's move on now to talk a little bit about our future direction and the roadmap. And I think whenever we talk about future development plans, it's important to look at that in context. In other words, this is really to give our customers, our prospects, our sales force, all of us working in this particular industry and with these customer requirements, an understanding of our future direction. It really should be only for informational purposes. It's not really ever to be part of a formal contract or a commitment to a customer, because things can change. We may find new things that need to be added. We may make some changes because of technology or what have you. But it does help us provide everyone with the future direction and be able to be clear with our customers that we do understand the challenges within the space that they're dealing with and how to make their business more productive. So with that, I'll go on to slide 37 here and talk a little bit about the themes in our upcoming releases. Where are we going from here? Particularly in the utility space, all of you have heard this drive for a smarter planet. Within IBM, we call it the Intelligent Utility Network for utilities. You may have heard it called Smart Grid, Demand Management. A lot of these areas are very, very important in terms of moving forward in our society today and how we more effectively consume energy and use that in a wise, efficient way, giving the utility the ability to know real-time, what the demands are on the system so that the different generation resources can be put online when and if needed to support that, not waste any resources. So that's the direction we're looking to support and solve the business problem of our utility customers. One part of that, of course, is what you've heard as called the smart meter. So we are driving with the product to support revenue meter asset management within the E&U, the energy and utilities strategy. And that involves a number of things. So we've been working with our existing GBS teams who have done this already for some of our existing customers, working closely with customers such as Encore, working with NiSource on 6. Detroit Edison is doing much of this work today on their 6 environment before they'd be upgrading. This is really happening all over the world, and we're looking at how do we bring the revenue meter into the class of assets managed efficiently by Maximo. So that will be delivered in a future release as core product. In that, we're also looking at the integration in terms of how that might be supported with Metcool so that you can capture last gasp information from the meter or abnormal readings, which would cause an actual work event to take place to manage the asset. Those are the kinds of things that we're trying to leverage within Maximo to really support a smarter planet. And the other item that we're focusing on is what I'll call converged asset or asset convergence. Many of you are very familiar with how we look at these assets becoming more intelligent. They may be IP addressable type assets. So we're looking at taking advantage of the whole Tivoli Asset Management for IT, that level of asset registry, and where that comes together as being a method to differentiate and use within our utility industry solution for the Maximo asset register and take advantage of those capabilities so that you can manage firmware and software that may be associated with those smart devices and assets. So we're not just talking about meters, of course, but all the devices and distribution that might be associated with that network. We're looking, of course, to support as we go beyond the next release to a couple of releases down of looking at, again, we said we're trying to enable this to support those natural integration points to customer information systems, to outage management, so how we can further leverage that whole ecosystem of the customer in terms of managing the demand that's coming into their network. We look to also fill gaps that we see in the gas utilities market segment, addressing some of the pipeline opportunities that we see currently that sales is facing and how we can deliver better product to support those areas. And, of course, we're always looking for any gaps that we see that competitors might be able to provide so we can fill those. And with spatial, we're looking to bring together the product that we have for linear Now, they work together side by side and will work together, but we're looking at taking advantage of that integration to a deeper level to be able to show dynamic segmentation and be able to expose what's called LBS or location-based services. And ESRI is going to move forward to a version called 9.4 mid-next year. A lot of enhancements in that particular release, so we want to be able to, in our next major release with Spatial, support that most recent release that will come out sometime midpoint next year from ESRI. Moving on to slide 36, it gives you a whole complete picture of the road ahead. So if I focus you to the third block there, you will see that you have IUN, or Intelligent Utility Network Enhancements. That's the meter asset lifecycle management, the ability to sample meters, which is typically a requirement in any utility, that they have to actually sample the successful operation of these meters to ensure that they have accurate performing assets in the field. Asset convergence I talked about, net cool integration. And then we're looking with the gas distribution to support the whole gas leak process and the gas 192 compliance. Further utilities enhancements will include leveraging Scheduler. So as Scheduler releases capabilities for labor on managing PM forecasting, we're going to add that capability that supports PM forecasting for crews, and be able to have CUs actually referenced on the work order and all the prerequisites that might be associated with work orders. Could be checklists and such things. So we're looking to support those. Many of those have been done for our customers in their implementations, and we want to take advantage of some of that implementation work and provide more of these prerequisites or checklists out of the box. So that will be something else that we'll continue adding in future releases as they become available. With Spatial in particular installed on utilities, I mentioned location-based services, linear spatial support, and also supporting the latest release from ArcGIS Server, which will come out sometime next year, 9.4. So those are all on the roadmap ahead. There's many, many, many other areas that will be addressed in Spatial. I just wanted to give you an understanding of our future direction. And then beyond that, the road ahead includes further being able to support capital work management, work forecasting, work crediting, and unit reporting. So many times when work is being done by contractors for utility, they're actually paid by the actual completion of units of work that have been reported back, and then they're credited for that percent completion and paid in that way. So we want to further support that. We're looking at further supporting scheduling and planning with assignment manager enhancements and graphical crew and appointment scheduling capabilities. So there's many areas that we see that we can continue to divide and conquer some of these challenges that our utilities face so that they can use one integrated solution from IBM to solve these business problems and work more efficiently, including going on to customer integration and a lot of the other capabilities that we want to work forward with Spatial so that it can become more and more independently agnostic and support the geospatial requirements that a customer has. Moving on to slide 39, I want to point to you the good work we've tried to collect for you, all of these additional resources and references that you have available to you. So you'll notice that there's a Spatial Asset Management product page that you can reference to get more details. There's the Spatial Info Center, and there's also an Info Center for Utilities that you can get a great more detailed information. We've got the Maximo Enterprise Asset Management Wiki, which can be reviewed. And then, of course, the slides for this call and the AVI recorded demo can be found on those links listed below for later consumption. There's also on those links, there's a PowerPoint, and there's also a Symphony, Lotus Symphony version of the full presentations available for you to download as you may need them. Going on to the following slide, you'll see those utility links for Maximo for Utilities, for its Info Center, a link for the business partners, and also an IBM Maximo for Utilities support link is there for your consumption. And then lastly, as we go to questions, I wanted to provide all the contact information and all the people involved in our team to help support this delivery to the market. I've got my own information there, Terry Saunders, if you have some general questions. Gary Cooper can get at some of the details with GIS and Spatial. Of course, Jerry Miller can help you with those transmission, distribution, utility-type questions. Kim Woodbury can assist with commercial and product questions, particularly as it relates to the Spatial deployment and GIS. Don Finhagen really leads our GBS practice for spatial implementation questions and lining up that for our customers so that they can actually deploy this in a live environment. Diane DePew is really our utility sales leader, and she can answer questions overall with utilities across the space, supporting their entire business, not just T&D, but all the generation side and that you might be needing to help support with a customer. And, of course, we've got Rob Hulp, who does the good work with our relationship with the SRI and can connect you with those people that might be most appropriate to support your opportunity that you might have and connect with ESRI personnel to help a successful team sale. So with that, I go to the final slide for questions, and I'd like to open it up for any questions that people might have. I'm sorry we've held you so long with this, but now's the time to help answer any questions that may be lurking through this presentation. Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir. At this time, if you would like to ask a question, you may press star 1. You will be prompted to record your first and last name for pronunciation purposes. To withdraw a question, please press star 2. Once again, if you would like to ask a question at this time, please press star 1. There will be one moment for our first question. Question comes from Jim Lee.
Hello.
Hello.
Terry. This question is for Terry. I'm looking at slide page number 22.
Okay.
I have a question about maximal spatial asset management pricing. Okay. So on that slide, you said 25,000 per install and 150 per authorized user.
Yes.
Is that additional install for per authorized user or either all? You know what I mean? My question is?
Sure.
Yeah.
Let me try to clarify two aspects. Certainly to make sure people would realize that with utilities, of course, it's included in the utilities pricing. Now, in this case, you're talking about selling maximum spatial asset as an add-on. So the $25,000 is just really a fee of the install across the enterprise. That really is pretty much a one-time install fee for that particular customer's deployment, and then it's a $150 per authorized user of GIS. And the customer can actually restrict this according to their contract as far as any restrictions. If they didn't want to open this up to all of their users, of course, with the conditional UI and security, they can open up the map tab only for those users that are, in fact, licensed and authorized to use Spatial and the map tab. Does that answer your question?
Yes, it did. And if I may, I have another question for you.
Sure.
On the page 21.
Uh-huh.
I saw those quotes. It's very,
yep.
You know, very good. Is it possible, or may, you know, by the way, I'm from Tony Hutchkey. We are working on the sales enablement.
Right.
We prepare a lot of sales materials. Do you think we can use those code in our sales material or not?
The point is we don't have permission to use these externally. So we certainly can use these quotes internally. And the reason why I chose to include them is because I thought it was very important for the sales teams to hear directly from our customers who have actually seen the product in live demonstrations. Now, if someone from sales would like to locate some of these customers for specific permission for a quote, I'm sure that can be done. The city of Austin, and as they further progress with some of these implementations like the city of Chesapeake and Northern Territories. But right now, I would say that this is really for internal consumption only.
Okay. Thank you.
Are there other questions?
Once again, if you'd like to ask a question, please press star 1. At this time, we do not have any further questions.
Okay. Well, thank you very much. I would like to believe that this has been a thorough presentation that has answered hopefully many of the questions that you may have had previous to this session. Again, I refer you to that list of contacts that we provide at the end of the presentation that if upon further reflection or within a customer opportunity, something's not fully clear and you need to further discuss that, please feel free to contact myself, Terry Saunders, for general questions, Gary Cooper for GIS detailed questions, Jerry Miller, of course, and T&D, Kim Woodbury for detailed commercial product questions as it relates to spatial. Don Feenhagen can be a great help to you for planning those implementations for our customers and being able to demonstrate to our customers that we do have the expertise to help them deliver the solution. Diane Dupuy can help you really lead that sale in the utilities environment. And, of course, Rob Culp can help connect you to the right ESRI resource to go in as a strong sales team. So with that, I really want to thank all of you for joining us on the call today, and I wish you great sales. Thank you very much.
Thank you for participating in today's conference. You may disconnect at this time.
Thank you for calling the Digital Replay Service.